G'day everyone, this is B Jermaine, aka The Terrible Australian, and welcome to my 7th edition of my 2019 Melbourne International Film Festival audio reviews. For this installment, I will be reviewing the films The Souvenir, Them That Follow, Ray and Liz, and Les Miserables. So let's get right to it. And first up, of course, is Joanna Hogg's latest film, The Souvenir. And the plot summary for this film, which I am reading off the MIFF program guide, is as follows. An aspiring filmmaker searching for a voice, Julie, Hannah Swinton Byrne, is a woman newly in love, falling for the rakish charms of older civil servant Anthony, Tom Burke. But as their romance plays out, largely in her comfortable London flat in the early 1980s, emotions are laid bare and secrets are exposed, and Julie learns more than she ever expected about life, heartbreak, and herself. Now, I got to admit, before going into watching The Souvenir, I had actually have never seen any of Joanna Hogg's previous work. So this was pretty much my first introduction to her as a filmmaker. Like, I know that a lot of people she's a pretty highly regarded filmmaker for a lot of people. But for some reason, I just never got around to checking out her previous work. But one of the reasons why I wanted to check out The Souvenir was the word of mouth it has been receiving over the last few months, because from both critics and also friends of mine who have seen the film, they have nothing but raves for it. So in that regard, I was definitely very intrigued to check it out. So now I figured this might be the best place to start with Joanna Hogg as a filmmaker. So now having seen the film, I gotta admit, I was a bit underwhelmed by it. And like, I'll state this, like, it's not a bad film. Like, it is well made, and also the performances from both Hannah Swinton Byrne and Tom Burke are really solid. But the film itself just didn't quite click with me. And I think the reason for that is I just found the whole experience of watching the film very cold. Like, it is a very cold and distant film, and I feel like that if it wasn't, I feel like I would have been more emotionally engaged by the story. And which is a shame, because like I said, it's a very well-made film, and Joanna Hogg definitely has a pretty good eye as a filmmaker. But I feel like the story that she wanted to tell with this film, which from what I've gathered is semi-autobiographical, just wasn't really compelling for me. And I feel like this is the kind of story that we've seen many, many times before. But even then, like, even though this is kind of based on at least semi-autobiographical of events that happened in her life, I just didn't find it all that interesting. And like I said, I feel like it's mainly because of the approach she took. And I was talking to a few friends of mine afterwards, like, about sort of my main criticism of the film, which it being too cold. And one of my friends brought up that maybe this is probably how she looks back on those events of her life. And I do agree in that extent. Like, this is her kind of looking back on a very sort of a almost cynical period. Like, she's looking back with a cynical eye on this certain period of her life. But at the same time, though, it just didn't make for compelling cinema to me. And which is a shame, because there are some good qualities about the film that are solid. Like I said, the performances are fine. Hannah Swinton Byrne, who is actually the daughter of Academy Award-winning actress Tilda Swinton, does a pretty solid job. Like, I feel for her first big major role in a film, I thought she was fine. Like, I don't think, but I kind of wish that the film gave her more to do, or at least gave her a bit more sort of more layers to that character, because even though I think she did a pretty solid job with the role, I feel like I just didn't find her that compelling of a character, which is kind of a shame, really, given that it's clear that this character is based on Hogg herself. And also, Tom Burke, I thought, definitely has the much more showier role, and I thought his character was compelling, but in regards to where his character goes through the story, I just found it rather predictable, and I just wasn't really as engaged by this character's journey as I could have been. But that being said, though, they're both pretty solid in the film. And also the supporting cast, which coincidentally also includes Tilda Swinton, are pretty solid in their roles as well. But I guess kind of thinking about the film, and I mean, I guess I need to see this film again because maybe because I wouldn't say I had huge high expectations for it, but I feel like it's not quite as great as everyone has made it out to be. And I feel like I said, I feel like the since it was a very cold and distant film, it just never sort of grabbed me the way that other people did. So I'm very curious to see how I feel about it on a second watch. But unfortunately, though, for me personally, I just found it kind of underwhelming, which is a shame because the potential was definitely there, but I just didn't feel like it really hooked me as a viewer. So if I had to give The Souvenir a rating, I give it a solid 2.5 out of 5. Now, moving on to the next film, which of course is the film Them That Follow. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. Somewhere in the wilds of the Appalachian Mountains, snake handler preacher Limmel Child, Walton Goggins, leads a small sect of devout believers. Willing to risk their lives, the townsfolk regularly handle deadly rattlesnakes as a way to test their soul's purity in the eyes of God. When the preacher's daughter, Alice Englert, finds herself hiding a secret that could tear the community apart, she has a choice to make: remain true to her faith or to her heart. Now, prior to reading about it in the Myth Program Guide, I had actually never heard of Them That Follow, which is kind of weird because given the kind of pedigree that this film has, I'm surprised I didn't hear about this much sooner, because this is a film that is stacked with a very big cast. Like I said, it includes Alice Englert, who's an Australian actress who I have been banging the drum for over the last couple of years, because I feel like that she's a very underrated talent and most people don't really sort of but she hasn't really sort of had that much acknowledgement from a lot of people over the last few years. And of course, Walton Goggins. But this is a film that it has a huge cast that includes like Thomas Mann, Caitlin Dever, Lewis Pullman, Jim Gaffigan, and recent Academy Award winner Olivia Colman. So just the cast alone definitely made me very interested in checking out, but also the story as well about this sort of somewhat cultish religious sect of Christianity that uses snakes in their sermons. And I've been hearing a lot about this type of sects of Christianity over the years, so seeing a film that kind of delved into this part of Christianity was very interesting for me. So that was two reasons why I definitely wanted to check out the film. Now, having seen it, I gotta say, I found it a really compelling and engaging film. And it's kind of interesting because reading sort of the reviews, a lot of people were very mixed on it. But maybe it's because I've been one of those people who, given sort of I come from a religious background and I'm always very interested about religion, particularly of cults, this was definitely going to be right up my alley for sure. And I found it quite an engaging experience overall, and I thought the film had a story that gripped me from beginning to end. And I really like that this is a film that's more about the characters than anything else, and I feel like the whole cast brings their A game to their performances in this film. And Alice Englert, like I said, is great in this film. She gives a great performance in the lead role, and everyone else is quite strong too. And Walton Goggins has a really interesting character with his preacher as the main preacher of the film. And I was kind of curious how that character was going to be translated, but I like the fact that the filmmakers bring a lot of layers to him that make him pretty interesting as a whole. But of course, you know, Olivia Colman, who is just Olivia Colman, she is just gangbusters in this film, and she brings her A-game to this role as well. But everyone brings solid work, and I thought that, like I said, the film, which is directed by Britt Paulton and Dan Madison Savage, was just a really captivating experience for me. And, like, yeah, there has a little, couple little flaws here and there. Like, some of the plot can be a little cliche, and some of the structure can be a slight disjointed. But overall, I found it such a surprise for me at MIFF this year. And I just found it, like I said, a really riveting experience from beginning to end. Like, I could definitely understand why some people... it didn't work for some people, or people are mixed on it. Because I will admit, though, like, even though this film is sort of centered around the snake handler sect of Christianity, I kind of wish the film dived into that a little bit more, because there are some little aspects about the story that the film does bring up, but it doesn't really sort of delve into it more as much as I would have liked it to be. But overall, I still found it a really compelling film, and one that I would definitely recommend. Like, it's not an amazing film by any means, but for what it is, I just found it an engaging little gem. So if I had to give Them That Follow a rating, I'd give it a solid 4 out of 5. I really dug this one a lot. Now, moving on to the next film, which of course is Richard Billingham's directorial debut, which is the film, which is also semi-autobiographical, just like The Souvenir was for Joanna Hogg's, with his film Ray and Liz. And the plot summary for this film is as follows. In 1996, Richard Billingham published Ray's A Laugh, an uncompromising set of photos of his alcoholic father Ray and his chain-smoking mother Liz. In his feature film debut, Ray and Liz brings those vivid images to life in 3 parts across 3 time frames. Billingham reanimates the Billingham Council flat, in which he and his younger brother were frequently neglected, crafting a stark portrait of life on the margins of Thatcher's England. You know what's funny about Ray and Liz? I was sort of going through the MIFF program guide. I sort of came across it, and the premise sounded intriguing, and I decided to... And like I said in previous MIFF audio review episodes, I always, when I go for the MIFF program game, besides picking out all the sort of the obvious big name films that are going to play at the festival, I always like mixing it up by checking out films that most people have never heard about, or at least in my case, where these are the first times I've heard the films and are probably not going to get as much publicity as the bigger ones, so I take a chance on watching the small ones. So if they're good, I'll definitely put the word out for them. When I stumbled across Ray and Liz, and this is definitely me being a bit of a bonehead, I just assumed the film was going to be a documentary. I assumed when I in the section of the program I was reading, I thought I was in the documentary section, and that's... But clearly I wasn't paying attention, because when I sat down to watch Ray and Liz, a film that I thought was going to be a documentary, it clearly was a scripted drama. So in that part, I kind of slapped myself in the face and facepalmed myself, because, Bede, you idiot, this is not a documentary. So, so I pretty much was an idiot that day. But that being said, though, I was kind of curious how... regardless, Ray and Liz would be. And honestly, when the movie starts, I honestly thought it was a documentary. And it wasn't until as it went along that I realized it was a scripted drama, especially with one of the cast members was somebody who I'd seen in other films before. So that's kind of the tipping point where I realized that, yeah, this is definitely a scripted drama and not a documentary. But that being said, though, like, what was the film like? Regardless of what I thought the film was going to be, what was Ray and Liz like? I gotta say, like, I give Richard Billingham, who is a photographer I'm not really that familiar with, making his directorial debut with this film, and sort of making a film that is very autobiographical about his childhood experiences. But unfortunately, I just found it too depressing, and I just wasn't really that engaged by it. And it's kind of similar to how I was with The Souvenir, because, like The Souvenir, it's a very cold and distant film, but I do give Billingham credit for tackling the film in a very authentic and honest way, because it feels very... The world that he creates within this film is very lived in, and the characters feel very believable. Like, this is one of those sort of autobiographical or semi-autobiographical films where I feel like the filmmaker who is doing it on their own lot, on events in their own life, really sort of captures that period and also the people that he knew really well. But again, like with The Souvenir, it just didn't make for very compelling cinema for me. And that was a question I kept asking myself after watching the film, was like, is someone's own life, if you're making a film about your own life story or events that happen to you in your own life, are they interesting enough to be a film? And I think that's a question I've been sort of plaguing about since, you know, I did see The Souvenir and Ray and Liz over the same weekend at MIFF, and that was a question that popped up at the end of, you know, I've been thinking about. And like I said, I think I give Billingham so much credit for tackling this story in a very honest way, that even to the point that it may be very alienating to the audience, because I know watching this film with an audience was very interesting, because there were definitely a couple of walkouts during the course of this film, and I can definitely understand why, because this is a film that is whose tone is very depressing, and its characters are very unlikable and kind of obnoxious and unpleasant, but at the same time though, they're interesting, but I just didn't find them engaging. And to the point, it just felt too depressing of an experience for me to really sort of fully embrace the film overall. Especially the first half in particular, which I didn't really sort of care for. But I will admit the second half of the film, which goes in a different era of Billingham's life, I found at least a bit more compelling because of where that story was going. But at the same time, though, for a film that... It also is a film that felt very drawn out as well, particularly the present, I guess, the quote-unquote present scenes with the actor who was playing Billingham's father, Ray, being an old man. Those scenes kind of just drag and feel very repetitive. And I can definitely see those scenes testing a lot of audiences' patience, and it did for me on occasion. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I give Billingham so much credit for making a film like this and doing it in a way that's very authentic to his life story. But, yeah, I just didn't find it... It was, again, like The Souvenir, it was too cold and depressing for me to... really sort of to fully get on board with it, which is a shame. Like I said, it's not a bad film, and definitely the film will, I can see, appealing for a lot of people. But yeah, so it just didn't quite work for me. Although I keep thinking, like, since I originally thought this was going to be a documentary, would this film worked better as a documentary? And I'm not exactly sure, but it would have been interesting though. But as a scripted drama, it's watchable, but yeah, I just couldn't really get into it. So if I had to give Ray and Liz a rating, like The Souvenir, I'd give it a 2.5 out of 5 as well. Now, moving on to the next film, which of course is Les Miserables. And no, this is not an adaptation of the Victor Hugo novel of the same name that's been adapted to like film, TV, and Broadway. This is completely unique film that uses its title and sort of mentions the book within its plot, but it's entirely its own thing. So what is this Les Miserables about? So the plot summary for this one is as follows. In Montfermeil, and I probably butchered that place's name, so please forgive me, where Victor Hugo set his original Les Miserables, a cop newly recruited to the anti-criminal brigade finds himself on a team whose questionable methods lead them to a direct conflict with the neighborhood gangs in their jurisdiction. When a drone camera captures a wrongful police shooting, events boil over into a dramatic clash that threatens to burn the suburb to the ground. Now, I first became aware of Les Miserables when the film premiered at the Cannes Film Festival earlier this year, and pretty much who I know who had saw the film was raving about it. And I just, and once I sort of hear a film sort of get a lot of a critical acclaim at any film festival, I immediately put it on the docket for a future watch. And once I heard that this was going to play at MIFF, I immediately put it on my viewing list for sure. I wasn't sure exactly what to expect with Les Miserables, and I feel like that's a benefit as well, because sitting down to watch it, I found it a pretty compelling little cop film. And it's interesting because if my friend Kern, who I saw the film with, sort of described the film as Training Day meets City of God, and I think that's a pretty good comparison to when describe Les Miserables, because it's from the beginning to end, I found it quite a compelling little film. Like, I will admit, for the first two halves of the film, I found it a pretty solid and compelling, if not quite remarkable, sort of cop film. Because during the first two halves, we sort of follow this group of cops, including one who's a new, like I said in the synopsis, it includes a brand new member, as they're going around doing their rounds and sort of like all the different characters they meet in the neighborhood during that. And of course, they get caught up in a bit once the sort of the big inciting incident happens, with them getting involved with a police shooting, and that incident being videotaped on a drone, that definitely kicks the plot into gear. And for most part, when that happens, it's pretty compelling. And also all the side characters that they meet along the way, like from the neighborhood kids and the gangsters and all that, the performances are really well done. But at the same time, though, it's nothing too new as well. Like, we've kind of seen this before in other films, but I think setting this in France and also tackling the subject of police brutality, police shootings and all that, makes it a very relevant and socially important film, because with a lot of that still happening in the news over the last few years, this is a film that's very much steeped into the now, regardless whether it be in France or any other places in the world. And so for at least two thirds or so, I found that, yeah, this is pretty good. Not amazing, but good. Like, nothing I hadn't seen before. But then once the film gets to the third act, that's where my attention actually grew, because things escalate to a very intense scene in the third act, which I will admit I was on my edge for the entire time. And throughout that whole section, I was just, my eyes were glued to the screen, because like that final section is definitely one of the most intense things I've seen in a film at MIFF this year. But, and I won't spoil what happens, but let's just say that once that sort of third half of the film kicks in, that's when things get really even more compelling. That's when things get more compelling in the story. And of course, where the film ends on, again, I won't spoil what happens, was just the perfect end to the film. Because it sort of makes you sort of, it ends on a sort of an ambiguous note where you kind of question what's going to happen in the story after the film finishes. And, like, I guess some people might see the ending as a bit anticlimactic, and I can see why people would have a problem with that. But I feel like, because this is just like when the film was just getting really into its story, but it actually worked for me, like, because I feel like it ends on a note where you sort of think about everything that you've watched during the film, and it leaves you with a lot of questions that you want to sort of talk about and discuss with people after you watch it. And I feel like that was, for me, probably one of the most perfect final shots I've seen in a film at MIFF, probably since Personal Shopper a couple of years back. Because I feel like the film's director, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, so please forgive me, and I'm so sorry that I'll get this wrong, because I did try to find out how to pronounce it, but I couldn't find any kind of proper pronunciation of it anyway. But Ladj Ly, if I butchered your name, I sincerely apologize. This is actually his directorial debut, And he's made documentaries before, but this is his first narrative film. And he ended the film on the perfect note. Like he could have gone further or shown what else happens during that third act, but he ended on a note where I feel like the film is more impactful because of it. And as a film overall, it's a pretty solid debut for him. Like, there definitely are some cliches here and there, and especially with sort of the cop kind of stuff that we've seen many times before. And there are definitely aspects of the story I kind of wish the film dived into a little bit more. And sometimes the film can be really contrived in how it sort of approaches its story. But I think as an overall film, and also, like, I do think some of the, you know, like I said earlier in, before I did the review, that even though this movie isn't based on the Victor Hugo novel of Les Miserables, the book is mentioned quite a bit throughout the film. And that kind of stuff did feel very tacked on, I will admit. But overall, that being said, those are kind of a couple little issues. Those kind of sort of small flaws throughout the film don't ruin the how engaging this film is. Like, it's not perfect, but it's a pretty well-made and compelling film that definitely is one that's very socially and politically charged, that you just can't help but get caught up with it anyway. And like I said, the ending leaves the film on a note where you just sort of, that I think a lot of people will definitely want to discuss after when it's over. I know I did with a few of my friends after I watched it. So if I had to give Les Miserables a rating, I give it a solid 3.5 out of 5. Like I said, there are a couple, you know, the film does feel very sort of contrived and cliched at times, but the film's still a really compelling piece of cinema nonetheless. And I'm definitely very curious to see what the director does after this film, because I definitely think he's got a good eye, and I'm very curious to see what he does next. So, yep, that's the end of this 7th edition of my 2019 Melbourne International Film Festival audio reviews. I hope you guys all enjoyed it, and keep a lookout very soon for my 8th edition, in which I'll be reviewing the films Bras After the Screaming Stops, Friedkin Uncut, We Are Little Zombies, and Emu Runner. So keep a lookout for that, and I'll see you guys later. See you, everyone. Bye.